meets me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Now, I don't know about you, but when I think Sunday morning, I think Gordon Goldsborough. Not just Gordon Goldsborough, Manitoba Historical Society Gordon Goldsborough, and Abandoned Manitoba. And Gordon joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadja.
So remind us of the clue that you gave us last week.
Mm-hmm. Well, I said that we were going to talk about a topic that's just a little bit different than the ones we've talked about in previous weeks. You know, rather than considering an abandoned place, as we often do, today I want to tell the story of an abandoned object, specifically the remains of one of the University of Manitoba's first science professors.
Do tell.
Okay, well, just last Tuesday, the University of Manitoba celebrated its 140th birthday. It was founded in 1877, and that makes it the oldest university in Western Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if people really know that. What they may not know, even if they knew that, is that the university as it exists today wasn't what that original university was. In a sense, what the university was back then in 1877 was simply the institution that provided the certificates. When you would get your degree, you know, when you get your parchment at the end of it all, it came from the University of Manitoba. But you wouldn't have taken your classes at the U of M. You wouldn't go to professors that were working for the University of Manitoba. Instead, you'd take your classes at one of its contributing colleges.
Okay.
Originally, there were three of these colleges. One was St. Boniface College, and that's today's University of St. Boniface.
Mm-hmm.
There was St. John's College, which is still affiliated with the University of Manitoba, and there was Manitoba College. Later, a few years later, then Wesley College, which today is part of the University of Winnipeg, joined. So,
mm-hmm.
in other words, what you have are four religious colleges. There were Roman Catholics, there were Presbyterians, there were Anglicans, and there were Methodists. They were the ones that basically controlled the agenda of the university. The classes were either taught by clergymen or by lay members of these religious colleges.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, you have to think that that probably had some kind of bearing on the kinds of instruction that the students at the universities received. It
right.
was founded in a religious worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the professors at that time, a fellow by the name of Reverend George Bryce, he was a cleric at the Manitoba College. He decided that, you know, it was probably better in the long run if they had specialists who could teach, particularly in the sciences. You know, maybe some of these clergymen were qualified to teach in some of the humanities, but, you know, I think he was one of the people who felt that, you know, his own capabilities to teach in the hard sciences was somewhat limited. So he started thinking, well, maybe if we could get some money together, mm-hmm. we could hire some scientists, some real scientists.
Right.
So he approached Donald Smith. Now, anyone who's a student of Canadian history probably recognizes that name. He's one of the more famous names. In fact, if you've ever seen the picture of the driving of the last spike for the Canadian Pacific Railway, there's a picture, a very dramatic picture of these people standing around while this fellow in a top hat's hammering in the last spike.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy that did the hammering was Donald Smith.
Okay.
He was one of the lead people that pushed the Canadian Pacific Railway to completion. Well, the Reverend Bryce approached him and said, you know, would you give us some money to hire some professors? And so he agreed. He gave them $20,000.
Mm.
Now, I know that doesn't sound like very much.
But for that time,
that's right.
A lot of money.
That lot
yeah.
of money,
yeah.
yes. That's right. So it was enough, in fact, to provide for six professors. So they created an advertisement. They sent it out all over the world because they wanted the best they could buy. And they eventually hired what I've come to call the original six.
Okay.
The original six were those first six science professors. There was a fellow named Frank Allen. He taught physics. Gordon Bell, who, of course, many people will recognize as the namesake for a high school here in Winnipeg,
yes.
He taught bacteriology, which was part of medicine at the time. Matthew Parker taught chemistry. Robert Cochrane taught mathematics. A fellow named Swale Vincent, he taught physiology and zoology, you know, the study of animals. And a fellow named Reginald Buller taught botany and geology. Now, that's always struck me as an interesting combination,
mm-hmm.
too. Botany, which is the study of plants, and geology, the study of rocks. So
right.
how that potentially could go together,
yes.
I'm not quite sure. Three of them were from Canada, and the other three were from Great Britain. Buller, Parker and Vincent were all British, and they came here, therefore, from Britain, from
mm-hmm.
overseas. Now, of those first six professors, I think Reginald Buller probably has to take the cake for the most eccentric of them. And so I think he's going to be the focus of our story this morning.
So what made him so eccentric?
Well, you name it. Okay, let's set the stage. He arrives in late 1904. He checks into the Vendome Hotel.
Okay.
Now, if you know Winnipeg, you know that the Vendome still stands. Mm-hmm. It's over on Fort Street. And, you know, it's not the best of hotels today. It was a fairly basic hotel. And that's where he lived, in fact, for the entire year that he was here teaching. In other words, he didn't buy himself a home. And the reason for that was that he actually didn't really stay here as a full-time resident. He would arrive in the fall when classes were resuming, sort of September.
Yeah.
He would stay here until the spring, you know, April or so, and then he'd go back to England. He was from England. His life was in England. His family was in England. And so he was not going to make a life for himself here in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
So he would travel across the ocean. In fact, by the time that he died, he had apparently crossed the Atlantic Ocean by ship 65 times.
Wow.
Every year he would go back to Britain. So he wasn't really in any sense sort of a true Winnipegger, at least not by our present standards. But here's where we started getting some of the interesting things about him.
Yeah.
One of the people that he met at the Vendome Hotel was a woman named Ruth Cawley. She was a journalist. She wrote for newspapers and magazines and so on, one of the most widely published authors anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But his interest in her wasn't as a journalist, and in fact, it also wasn't in any romantic sense. It wasn't because he was a man and she was a woman. In fact, she was married. And I should point out that Buller never married. He was a bachelor his whole life. The reason he was interested in her is that he believed that she was telepathic.
Okay.
Yeah, that she could
interesting
throw her thoughts, that, you know, she could hear other people's thoughts, they could hear hers.
Yeah.
And Buller was a very big advocate for telepathy. In fact, even late in his life, he claimed that telepathy was a proven phenomenon, that it wasn't something sort of on the fringe of science, which is interesting. You know, here's a guy who's a very rational scientist.
I was just going to say, he's coming from a very scientific background to
precisely
believe in something that would be considered fringe.
So that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of his little personal quirks is that he fancied himself as a poet.
Don't we all?
Well, I do not, I have to say. But yeah. Buller did, and in his papers, I've gone through a lot of his papers, and I found numerous examples of just some truly awful poetry.
Please tell me you have some to share with us.
I do indeed.
Okay, perfect.
But I have to set the stage for it.
Okay.
So today, one of the things we have is something called Uber,
yes,
which of course is a way for people to get a ride from place to place. They can get a ride with, you know, a person in their own car.
Right.
Well, back in the early 20th century, Winnipeg had something equivalent to Uber. Basically, the idea was the only way at that time to get around was by streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
And the streetcars went on a route, and they were typically very crowded. In the wintertime, they were closed up. The air in there was probably a little foul.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the early automobile owners, and automobiles first started showing up on Winnipeg streets in the early 1910s, they decided, hey, I can make some money. So they figured if I drove around the city and I could pick up passengers in my car,
yeah,
you know, charge them a little bit of money, you know, maybe I can make a little money for myself. And the nickname for a 5-cent coin was a jitney.
Okay.
So these cars came to be known as jitneys. And Buller loved jitneys. So he wrote a poem. Would you like me to?
Please.
Okay. It was entitled To a Jitney.
And I want it with feeling, please,
Gordon.
Oh, my
God. Okay, well, I'll try my
best.
Thank you. Hail to thee, jitney. Of thy cheapness and speed, the good folks of Winnipeg long have had need. Hail to thee, jitney. May thy tires ne'er wear through. May thy spark plug keep sparking and ever spark true.
I love it. I'm sorry.
Well, okay, whatever your thoughts about his quality as a poet, it was nevertheless his heartfelt feelings about how much he liked jitneys.
Exactly.
Well, he wasn't alone. A lot of Winnipeggers loved the jitneys, so much so that it started to bite into the ridership on the city-owned streetcars.
Okay.
And the city fathers weren't happy about that because they were starting to lose money in the streetcars. Mm-hmm. So what did they do? They banned jitneys.
They didn't write a poem about streetcars?
Well, they may have done that
too. That could have worked.
I don't know.
So they banned the jitney.
They banned the jitney. Yep. So unfortunately, the jitney phenomenon was a fairly short-lived one here in Winnipeg, and we're now revisiting it with the whole Uber matter.
Yes.
But Buller felt inclined to write then a farewell ode to the jitney.
Perfect. I'm waiting.
Goodbye, dearest jitney. Thy loss is a blow. And oft think I of thee as homeward I go, the air very stuffy with microbes filled thick, and stop. Oh, dear. Oh, thou always were quick.
See, this is why he never got married. He was in love with a jitney.
Well, he was in love with quite a few things, not romantically, yes. but a lot of other things. You know, he, for example, experimented with psychedelic mushrooms.
Okay.
He was a specialist in fungi, in mushrooms, among other things.
Yeah.
And some of the earliest investigations of the hallucinogenic properties of mushrooms he would experiment on. He would get some of his laboratory assistants to take some of these mushrooms and, of course, experience all kinds of wonderful phenomena that he would document.
For, quote-unquote, scientific reasons.
Of course. Of course, yes. Well, okay, so Buller was here. He moved into an office over in the science building. In fact, listeners may recall that at one time there was a large building where Memorial Park is today,
mm-hmm.
Just north of the provincial legislature. That was the main campus of the University of Manitoba. That building was built in 1901, just before Buller arrived. He moved in there when he came here in 1904, and he stayed there in this very sumptuous office. By all accounts, it was a nicely appointed office in that building until 1942. But by that time, he had retired from the university, and is often the case even today when a professor retires, they are no longer eligible for an office. Well, Buller got kicked out of his office,
Uh-oh.
And he was not pleased.
Yes.
So he was very angry. He did compose a poem about his thoughts on the matter. I won't
Gosh,
read it for
darn
you.
It.
It's too lengthy, I'm afraid, but it was heartfelt, I can tell you.
Yeah.
And he was therefore forced to box up years' worth of files, all of his accumulated materials, because, of course, going back to England every summer, you couldn't take everything with you. So you can imagine his office was just a mess of stuff.
Yeah.
Boxed it all up, put it into storage, and within 2 years, he was dead. He was diagnosed in early 1944 with a brain tumor.
Oh, okay.
And he died that July at the age of 69, so certainly not an old man by any means. Well, his last will and testament decreed that he was to be cremated. And so that was duly done, and his ashes were put into a sealed copper box. Now, apparently, the story was always, the legend of Buller was that he was so angry at having been evicted from his university office that he decreed in his will that none of his personal papers, his collection of rare books, any of his effects would ever go to the University of Manitoba. That was it. He was cutting off all ties. He was done.
Yeah.
So instead, all of these things then went to something called the Dominion Rust Laboratory, which is a scientific research facility for doing agricultural research, and a number of his former students worked there. So they took in these things. And later, on the same site as the Dominion Rust Laboratory, Agriculture Canada built a laboratory building in the 1950s. People who are familiar with the University of Manitoba campus will probably remember that building. It sat next to the Esbister building, and it was actually recently demolished because it had reached the end of its life. It had some issues structurally and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, all of his papers went to the library in that building. They, in fact, named it the Buller Memorial Library. Well, years went by, and the librarians wondered, we have all these boxes of these papers that really don't relate to agriculture in a direct way. You know, what do we keep these around for? So they eventually sent them off to a federal government dormitory records facility here in Winnipeg on Inkster Boulevard.
Okay.
And there they sat for years and years. Meanwhile, his collection of rare books was kept in this locked cabinet in the library. Nobody seemed to do much with it. And then Buller's ashes, his remains, were in a nice little cubbyhole in the wall of the library with a nice little plaque over top saying Buller Memorial Library. And there it sat for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 2004, the Faculty of Science at the University of Manitoba was celebrating its 100th anniversary. I was asked to write an article about those original six, those first six scientists. And I thought, well, a great way to do this would probably be to look through those Buller papers. I knew that the Buller papers existed somewhere. I went over to the Agriculture Canada lab and I said, where are these papers? And they said, oh, they're at this Dormant Records Center over on Inkster. So I went over there and it was the mother load of information.
Really?
Just a rich, rich source of information, because again, not only was Buller a pack rat, he kept everything, but he had never had family, so he never had kids to come along and throw a lot of the stuff out.
Right.
And he had, of course, been forced to box it all up when he was kicked out of his office. So here was literally the day-by-day records of the university in its very early days before there was a lot of the current administration and at the current site.
Yeah. quite the treasure trove.
It was indeed. And so I went through them and I thought, you know, this collection really warrants other people looking at them. So I went to the University of Manitoba Archivists and said, you know, maybe we could ask to have these records back. And they said, well, you know, we have this heard this rumor, you know, Buller said, absolutely not. So I actually went to the Provincial Archives. I found a copy of his will. And lo and behold, nothing in it about anything to do with his papers not going to the U of M. So I thought, well, you know, since there's no reason it can't. So a request was made, and very generously, the National Archives gifted the Buller papers then to the University of Manitoba.
Good for you.
Yeah, well, so they came back to the U of M. I thought that was really nice of the federal government to do that. Mm-hmm. Then a few years later, the decision was made to demolish that Agriculture Canada building. And they said, well, we have all these Buller books. You know, U of M, would you like those as well? And they said, well, hey, that's great. We have these at other papers too. And they said, well, then there's this also this other wee problem. We've still got Buller and his remains. They're in the hole in the wall. And of course, we're tearing the building down. We can't leave them in the hole. So they said, would you take those too? And they said, oh, okay. So
bonus.
So the U of M now owns Professor Buller's remains. What are they going to do with them? Well, at the U of M today, there is a building called the Buller Building, named for Professor Buller. In fact, there's other buildings named for those early professors, too. There's the Allen Building, which is for physics, the Parker Building, which is for chemistry, you know, named for some of these early professors. And so they, well, in front of the Buller Building, there's actually a monument for Professor Buller that tells a little bit about his history. Maybe that's where we'll put him. So in 2013, he was put into the monument.
Wow.
You know, and the funny thing is, I've talked to students recently about this, and they said, well, we've walked by that monument numerous times, not knowing that there inside lay Professor Buller himself.
Incredible. Yeah. That was great. I love this character that you painted for us. How interesting.
He was really one of the rare, you know, really quirky, really interesting characters of that early University of Manitoba. And it's a little known piece of the history of this university that, say, is the oldest in Western Canada.
Gordon Goldsborough, thank you so much for that. Tell us what we can expect next week.
Okay, well, next week we're going to visit a 150-year-old building that overlooks the Red River. And it's connected to two themes that we've explored in some of the past episodes of this series, specifically the treatment of tuberculosis and door-to-door sales. Oh. And you can imagine, how do those two things go together?
I have no idea.
Wait till next week.
We'll have to find out. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
You're welcome, Nadja.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.